Welcome to today's edition of the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show podcast.
Welcome in hour number three, Tuesday edition. I am Clay Travis. He is Buck Sexton. I know many of you have begun your travels for Thanksgiving in 2 days' time. I hope you're with friends and family. Want to let you know, download the podcast. A lot of people on the roads. Maybe you're flying as well. Want to make sure you have something to listen to. Clay Travis, Buck Sexton, download it, sign up. Help us set a new record in November for listenership on the podcast. And we also want to let you know, Buck and I will both be on live tomorrow with you. I know that a lot of you in the past several decades became very fond of Rush Limbaugh's Thanksgiving special. We are going to have James Golden on with us. We will do our best to honor Rush's legacy and also continue to spread the traditions that so many of you hold so fondly for this show. Want to let you know that we will be with you tomorrow as a part of that. We'll be off on Thanksgiving. We'll have a best of, and then Buck is going to be in on Friday with a live show while I will be hanging out with my family. Appreciate him being here for that Friday. So that is the roadmap for the rest of the week for everybody out there. Just getting in your car, I hope that a lot of you had an opportunity so far to listen to Kyle Rittenhouse's interview with Tucker Carlson on Fox News last night. Fantastic examination of the case and also of Kyle Rittenhouse himself. One of the questions, and by the way, let me let you also know, we're going to be joined by Will Kane, a friend of both Buck and Mines, at the midway point of this hour, just after 2:30 Eastern. One of the big topics that has been out there has been, what sort of legal recourse does Kyle Rittenhouse have now that he has been found not guilty of murder by virtue of self-defense, given all of the insults and all of the lies that have been spread by him in the mainstream media, by politicians, by MSNBC, by CNN, by the New York Times and the Washington Post? I'm going to get into that in a moment. But first, here is a cut from Kyle Rittenhouse talking about the legal representation he had and the fact he says they left him in jail while they raised money, he says, for their own benefit. This is cut one.
87 days of not being with my family for defending myself and being taken advantage to, being used for a cause by John Pierce and Lynn Wood, trying to raise money so they can take it for their own benefit, not trying to set me free. I could have been bailed out by mid-September, but they wanted to keep me in jail until November 20th.
Buck, I mean, that also is awful. I mean, I don't think most people talk about the fact that this kid, who was 100% innocent of any wrongdoing, we know based on the jury's determination, spent 87 days in prison. That's over basically 3 months of his life.
The alleged justification for this from his lawyers was that he was safer in jail. And I can tell you that is not the case. There's actually a lot of evidence to show that people, you're much more likely to be assaulted, to be attacked across a whole range of contexts in prison than outside of prison. Or in jail. And so this just goes to show you there were people early on who, I mean, for Kyle to say that at this stage, too, is absolutely damning for these two guys. It's a shame because I actually like the Richard Jewell movie in which Lynn Wood is essentially the hero, right? But it's still a very good movie. And it's just an entire movie that's like, don't trust the FBI and don't talk to them. That's what the movie actually teaches you. But Kyle was able to push through this and really, when he was giving this interview with Tucker, Clay, it becomes clear that he had so much poise and mental fortitude for a kid his age. He's facing life in prison.
Yes.
He wasn't yet even 18 years old when this incident happens. Not only is he facing life in prison, but very powerful people all across. I mean, the now president, then candidate for the Democrat side for the presidency, basically said that this guy should rot in jail for the rest of his life, right? It's one thing if you're wrongfully accused and you're just going through the trial. That's got to be terrifying. Imagine being wrongfully accused, an entire political party, the Democrat elites, media apparatus, the left, the organized left in general, is screaming, screeching for you to spend the rest of your life in prison while that's happening. Think about how terrifying that would be.
Buck, I'll tell you this. Lawyers don't lose sleep over defending people they think are guilty. We lose sleep over defending people we think are innocent. Because if you're defending a guilty person, you have a constitutional obligation to defend them to the best of your ability. But if they end up being convicted, it may be the just result in a case. Lawyers lose sleep, and I guarantee you this was the case for the lawyers, credit them, the defense attorneys who won the case for Kyle Rittenhouse. I guarantee you those guys tossed and turned, in addition to the fact that Rittenhouse himself did, many nights worried that they were not going to be able to do the best possible job because this kid was innocent of all wrongdoing and they knew he faced potential life in prison. Let me just say this too. There's a lot of discussion out there, Buck, about what sort of legal opportunities Kyle Rittenhouse has now that a jury has determined that he's not guilty of the crime when he was labeled a murderer, a white supremacist, a domestic terrorist, all these different things on CNN, MSNBC, The New York Times, The Washington Post, among others. And I have argued for a long time that New York Times v. Sullivan needs to be, this is the sort of foremost case in the First Amendment jurisprudence, that it needs to be refined for our modern era. Because, and this is getting a little bit in the weeds, but just for people out there to think about, one of the major challenges in holding these big media companies accountable for the lies they spread about you is New York Times v. Sullivan sets up a distinction between a public and a private figure. If you're a public figure, you have to show, and that's why when we played in hour one, Kyle Rittenhouse said that the media company showed actual malice against him. You have to show actual malice if you're a public figure in order to recover under defamation standards. I think we need to reconsider, and Scalia and Thomas have said this in Supreme Court opinions, we need to reconsider New York Times v. Sullivan in light of the social media era in which we live in now, where basically everybody's a public figure, Buck, because if you're in a diner and somebody takes a video of you and it goes viral, you become a public figure because you said or did something, even if you don't want to be a public figure. And so this distinction about what damages can be gained for public versus private figures is so challenging when it comes to Kyle Rittenhouse and people of his nature who may be 100% innocent, may have lies spread about them, but because of the public figure standard of New York Times v. Sullivan, it's really hard for them to recover.
And yet Nick Sandman, as yes, we all know, is out there advocating for he Kyle should. Rittenhouse to sue. And Sandman, it is believed, I think the settlements were kept private.
That's
but
right.
It is believed that he got a pretty substantial payout. But that's to your point about how anyone can become a public figure,
yes,
and therefore the public-private figure distinction, that's more sensible in the era of newspapers.
1960s, where, it made sense.
Where there are very few people that find themselves an issue of public concern who aren't either, you know, an accused criminal or a politician or, you know, somebody who's already in the public eye. The reality here with Nick Sandman was he was on a school trip, as we all know, and someone
innocent
marched up to him and took a video of his face, and he didn't do anything, and all of a sudden they're calling him, you know, a little smug white supremacist and all this other crazy stuff that they were saying, instead of pointing out that an adult and a very, you know, strange fellow was harassing him. Sandman looks like I don't know what the payout was, right? There are people,
yes,
that make all kinds of claims it was very large, it was actually very small, who knows? But there at least should be the accountability that we could all have. Is stop thinking that any of these are news organizations. Stop believing that when you read the New York Times or you watch CNN, they are making a good faith effort to give you unbiased, non-politicized information. That is not what they are doing. They have to give you accurate facts for the most part, because otherwise nobody will believe them. But it's about things like, what do they cover? How do they cover it? What do they not cover? That's often the single biggest editorial decision. And that's why I'm so outraged sitting here, as we have no updates, it seems, from anywhere right now, from anyone, about what happened with Waukesha and that mass murderer. How is that even possible that we don't have more information? Who's asking the police? Who's making sure that we find out what the current status of the motive is? So what they cover, what they don't cover is obviously a huge part of all of this. I think that it would be good to see a lawsuit here. I know that's what you're talking about. But more to the point, ever just understand these are warring propaganda machines out there in the media. They don't care that they lied to you. They don't care they lied to you about Donald Trump and Russia collusion, about Jussie Smollett, about the Duke lacrosse case. Go down the list. I mean, just think of about Hunter Biden's laptop being not real or being disinformation or whatever. I mean, they said the Hunter Biden laptop, I think it was the Washington Post, published all these former Intel nerds. And I can say yes. That because I am one. Who are saying, oh, it's Russian disinformation. None of them are embarrassed by this. None of them feel like, oh, gosh, I shouldn't have done that, because they served the purpose at the time. Go on offense against Trump and the right. And that's what all these media organizations do. The moment that they have to change even the facts to serve that purpose, they will. So, yeah, sue them. You're not going to sue them out of business. They're insured. They have error and omissions insurance. So you're not going to be able to do that. Sue them, although they did do that to Gawker. If you remember, Peter Thiel, God bless him, did it. Gawker was a cesspool online of the worst kind. And so there is a precedent here.
Well, and this goes to why he should sue. That this is my argument. He needs to sue because we need to set the precedent for all those things that you just said, Buck. There needs to be a standard other than New York Times v. Sullivan that makes media companies worry that they might get hit with $100 million or $1 billion judgments that could shatter their ability to continue as viable business entities. Because right now, New York Times v. Sullivan, which was set in 1960s, in a time, Buck, when the only time the average person's name appeared in the newspaper was when they might be born and when they might die, the idea of a public-private figure dichotomy might have made sense in the 1960s. It doesn't make sense in our modern era. And you shouldn't be able to use Kyle Rittenhouse's public persona as a reason to get so much wrong in your reporting about him. There need to be consequences. And that's why we need an updated version of New York Times v. Sullivan in this country in a substantial way. Because for people out there who believe that our media is broken, and I am with you, and I believe that it is in fact broken, one of the best ways that we could change that is by altering the law, New York Times v. Sullivan, updating it for the modern era, and eliminating the standards and practices that were put in place in the 1960s for a new modern era where there needs to be more consequences for these major for-profit newspaper institutions. Meantime, Salvation Army's dedicated to doing the most good by meeting human needs wherever, whenever, and however they can. Every year, they help more than 30 million Americans in poverty battle daily challenges. You can help ensure that hope marches on this holiday season. Last year, the Salvation Army provided more than 214 million meals through drive-through distribution, grab-and-go, home delivery, and more. This year, the Salvation Army is working hard to meet the demands with food pantries, which supply fresh fruit, produce, canned goods, and healthy frozen items for free to so many people who need them. They have so much that they do for sit-down programs that provide hot meals, valuable human interaction, mobile meals delivering sustenance to those who can't reach a food distribution center. They will help so many people out there, tens of millions, the most vulnerable members of society, help to escape the daily burdens of food insecurity. Make sure hope marches on this Christmas season by dialing 250, that's #250 on your phone and saying Salvation Army. You'll have the opportunity to receive a one-time auto-dialed text message, that's #250, that links to a Salvation Army donation form.
It has been very interesting to watch MSNBC in full meltdown mode in recent days after the Kyle Rittenhouse verdict. There's some reporting I saw today that some of the execs at that run NBC, actually, and Comcast are starting to think maybe it's getting a little too crazy. And if we're talking about crazy on MSNBC, Joy Reid, very high up on that list. Here she is. Instead of saying, I got everything wrong about Rittenhouse, everything I said was basically untrue, I have no idea what I'm talking about, and oh, by the way, nobody got into a time machine, went back 10 years, hacked my blog, and made it seem like I was anti-gay. That was actually just Joy Reid writing and now running away from responsibility for what she said. But anyway, here she is on Rittenhouse.
Now to the question dividing America. Kyle Rittenhouse, hero or vigilante? Days after Rittenhouse was acquitted of all charges, including double homicide, the American right, including some of the most craven, openly inflammatory bomb throwers in the Republican Party, celebrated the gunning down of three fellow Americans, leaving two of them dead. Like it was the Super Bowl. Some of these professional right-wing trolls who get paid with your tax money as political representatives are now fighting over who gets to hire Rittenhouse as an intern.
There's part of it's like, I hope she's kind of talking about us.
Right? We don't get paid with tax money.
I know, that's the problem, right? Yeah. But I was like, oh, wait, are we
I was like, maybe that's us. Oh, we, no, we don't get paid with tax
money.
Are
we on her list of people that she hates? Because that would be fun.
If we're not, I'm disappointed.
Yeah. But anyway, it just goes to show you, yeah, would I have Kyle Rittenhouse as an intern? Absolutely. I'm sure he'd show up on time, be very polite, and do a very good job. But my understanding is members of Congress have already started to say they're going to do that. I also want to get to Reagan in Houston, Texas. Has something interesting to say to us. Reagan, what's going on?
Hey, man, how y'all doing?
We're good.
I was listening to your turkey breast inflation story earlier.
Yeah.
And I wanted to share something with you. I'm director of distribution and logistics for a big company here in Texas. And at the beginning of the pandemic, we used to pay $2,850 to ship in a 40-foot container of goods from the Asian continent. Didn't matter if it was Ningbo, Ho Chi Minh, Yintian, it didn't matter. It was about $2,850. Throughout the pandemic under Trump, it went up and up, but then when Biden took over, it really started to accelerate. And as of today, to move a 40-foot high cube container from the Asian continent to the port of Houston, what we call all water service through the Panama Canal, it's averaging between $19,000 and $21,000
per
40-foot container.
Unbelievable. What's really causing that, Reagan? We only got about 30 seconds.
Yeah. Well, really what it is there's a big blockage out in L.A. and Long Beach that you might have heard about. There's about 170 container ships sitting at anchor. Before the pandemic, the most that ever was 17. What that does is displace all of those out of the total global supply chain. So they're not unloading and going back in. So it's like running out of seats on a bus because you have too many buses stuck in a traffic jam. And so the spots on those buses then become more and more expensive for the few buses that are still in circulation. So until they get California fixed, I mean, the industry says we're not getting out of this. I'm talking about industry newsletters I read every day as a director until the end of 2022.
And fantastic.
You can't have something that used to be $3,000 cost $21,000 and say inflation is a temporary thing.
Wow. Thank you so much, Reagan. Love the expertise this audience brings to so many issues.
No doubt. By the way, using the internet without ExpressVPNs, like having a first aid kit but not keeping it stocked up. Most of the time, you're fine. But what if you need something from that kit and the thing you need most is not there? That's what happens with ExpressVPN. There's going to come a time when you need the protection and privacy they offer. Every time you connect to the internet through an unencrypted network, you could be exposing yourself. Wi-Fi, network, coffee shop, airport. You're taking a risk. Some hacker is going to grab your personal data. Those cyber thieves are motivated by a big payday for stolen passwords and identities. That's why you need ExpressVPN. And right now, you can secure your online data today by visiting expressvpn.com/clay, expressvpn.com/clay. Extra 3 months for free, expressvpn.com/clay. Welcome back in, Clay Travis, Buck Sexton Show. Appreciate you guys hanging out with us a couple of days here before Thanksgiving. We'll be live with you tomorrow. Buck will be with you on Friday. Best of on Thanksgiving. Will Kane, we're getting set up right now. Do you want to take a couple more calls while we roll with him right now, Buck?
We will take some calls, but we got our man Will Kane with us right now. He is the co-host of Fox and Friends. Co-hosts are obviously the best. Co-host of Fox and Friends Weekend with our buddy Pete Hegseth and Rachel Campos Duffy. Mr. Will Kane of Fox News. My old buddy, how are you?
What's up, Buck? What's up, Clay?
We're good, man.
What's shaking, my man?
We got to get you all in studio with us sometime, although the three amigos, so we can chat about all the things happening in America and around the world. Will, I'll start with this one. We got so many we could do. We don't have too much time, so let's get into it. The Democrat Party in panic mode from their own research, finding out that their brand is in the dumpster. What's going on?
Well, it turns out calling everybody in the country who disagrees with you is a racist is an unpopular message. And after their loss in Virginia, it looks like the lesson they took from that is let's triple down. Let's triple racism, everybody. Yeah, it's not a good brand, Buck. It's not a good brand, Clay. And I think, you know, it's not just in the name calling. It's in the policies. Clearly, critical race theory is an incredibly unpopular ideological concept. People don't want their children being taught to be neo-racist and embrace segregationist policies. And then beyond that, how about not destroying our pocketbooks with an inflation? So I think from top to bottom, here's the easiest way to distill it, Buck. What's going well for the Democratic Party? If you can answer that question, you can answer what's wrong with their brand.
It's well said. Will, we got to hang out a couple of days last week in Fort Lauderdale. It was a lot of fun at the Fox Patriot Awards. We talked a lot. I don't know we talked about this, but I like to look for things that are somewhat moving in a positive direction. And in the world of sports, I was really encouraged, Will, by the WTA coming out, standing up to China, doing the opposite of what the NBA said, saying, look, it may cost us a lot of money, but the way you're treating this missing tennis star who's alleged sexual assault against a prominent Communist Party official, it was everything that the NBA should have done. I was really encouraged by them standing up to China. Were you?
I'm encouraged, and I'd like to see more American businesses, Clay, show and exhibit some semblance of a moral backbone. I mean, look, you're a capitalist. I'm a capitalist. Buck is a capitalist. Everyone listening wants to make the most money they can for their talent and to provide for their family. But money, I mean, I'm sorry how cliched it may sound, money is not the end of our story. We're moral beings. We're beings that have to go to sleep at night and sleep soundly. And the WTA found their line in the sand. They said, disappearing one of our stars isn't worth the money. Here's a really interesting question, I think, Clay. What do you think if the NBA were in the same position, their choice would be? Let's say Stephon Marbury, he's retired now, but you remember Stephon Marbury. After he washed out of the NBA, he went to play in China for a lot of years. You remember that? So what if Stephon Marbury had disappeared while he was playing in China? What would the NBA's response to that have been? And by the way, that's not even a perfect analogy because he wasn't an active NBA player at the time. So we'd have to find an active NBA player who disappears in China and ask ourselves, what would the NBA do?
I think they'd pretend it didn't happen.
We're speaking of Will Cain here. He is of Fox News. You can check him out on the weekends hosting Fox and Friends in the morning. Will, also, you have a podcast, right? The Will Cain podcast, which folks should be checking out, too. You know, Will, we have a few things in common. We hosted together at the Blaze many years ago, and also both of us spent a time at CNN. Earlier in the show, Clay and I were talking about how the media essentially now, when I say the media, I mean the big legacy corporate Democrat media, doesn't seem ashamed at all about what's happened here with Kyle Rittenhouse. In fact, if anything, they either pretend they weren't lying about it or they're happy that they got away with it as long as they did. How long is that sustainable as a model for them?
Until there's an accountability mechanism, Buck, that is undeniable. You and I were talking earlier this week, Buck, about the progression of CNN. So I was a conservative contributor analyst at CNN from about 2010 to 2014. It was a different CNN than it is today. It was a biased CNN. They weren't objective. They were still liberal, but they were simply biased. Buck, I think you were there in, what, 14 to 16,
yep,
roughly, maybe in that time frame?
I was there when they lost their mind. Like, I was there for the nervous breakdown of CNN.
Yes. Yeah, so I would say they were making the transition while you were there from biased to propagandist.
I mean, maybe it was my fault, but
I think what we're watching now is them make the move from propagandist to activist, play an active role in the news cycle. And MSNBC best embodies this with the photographer trailing the bus, the jury bus, in the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. But this weekend, I said this on Fox and Friends, Buck. I said, hey, I'm a little naive. I thought after the trial was over, they'd stop lying. But they didn't stop lying. And it's shocking to me because I would think, okay, ratings aren't the accountability mechanism because their ratings are in the tank and clearly they're not paying the price for low ratings. But what about shareholders and potential defamation suits? Does not the shareholder of MSNBC or Comcast or Discovery go, this is bad business. This is hurting us. And by the way, the answer to that might be yes, because John Malone, who owns Liberty Media, which owns Discovery, which owns CNN, seems to be sort of putting the feelers out there that I don't like what's happening here at CNN.
Yeah, he said, I think that's a credit to him. He kind of cracked the whip and said, this organization is a shell of what it used to be when Buck, you were there and when Will was there. And I don't know if it was a coincidence, but did you guys see the video where they were talking about the WTA and the response in China, and they left up their broadcast window in China to show that they were being censored in real time? I thought that was pretty powerful of CNN to point out, hey, we're speaking truth to power for a change. This is what China's doing as we are discussing their disappearing of this Chinese tennis star.
Yeah, and that's coming face-to-face with truth in China, Clay. And I would love to see, and by the way, Malone is a new majority shareholder of CNN.
Yeah.
So it's not as though he's been there for some time. He's new, so he can institute change if he wants to. I'd like to see them face truth in the United States of America, not just in China, on race relations. Buck, you had a tweet earlier this week, and I thought you put it really well. For much of my career, and Clay, you and I talked recently, and I'm curious where you are on this. I really loved the idea of a lofty debate of ideas, like a battle of ideas. I'm right, yep. You're left, I'm conservative, you're liberal. I want to see which idea wins the day. And Buck, you had a tweet, you said, unfortunately, that's not the age we're in. We're in an age where we're battling over basic truths. And I think you put it really well. That's what the fight is today. It's over truth and lies, not right and left.
Check out Will Cain's podcast and also look for him on Fox and Friends, where he is co-hosting on weekends, and look for him to pop up on Fox all throughout the week. Will, when are you hosting? You'll be hosting again soon, the 7 p.m., I know. And people should look for you on the weekends on Fox and Friends. Anything else you want to promote for the people listening across the country?
I'll be hosting that 7 p.m. primetime show the week of December 13th, as you mentioned, Fox and Friends. And later this week on the Will Cain podcast, I've got an hour-long conversation with Andy Ngo, the most hated journalist on the left in America.
He's such a brave, brave little guy, man. Andy Ngo. Will Cain, everybody. Check it out. Thanks, Will. Great to have you on.
Thanks, fellas.
The Tallulah Towers Foundation has been honoring America's heroes ever since 9/11, when so many Americans rushed to help those injured when our nation was attacked. The 20th anniversary of that event was just 2 months ago. We witnessed the foundation honor the Americans we lost on 9/11, as well as those we've lost in the war on terrorism. Their chairman and CEO, Frank Siller, was front and center on a 600-mile walk connecting the people and the scenes involved in those attacks 20 years ago. Thanks to your support, Towers of Light returned to the Pentagon and Shanksville Memorials. And for the first time, our country recognized the people we lost to 9/11-related illness through the foundation's name-reading ceremony.
And now the foundation's bringing hope to heroes and their families, giving away at least a home a day from Thursday this Thanksgiving to New Year's Eve. You can honor our vow to never forget. Donate $11 a month at t2t.org. That's T, the number 2, T.org.
Welcome back in to Clay Travis and Buck Sexton Show. We are closing up shop here today with all of you. Want to make sure you know if you missed any part of the show, you can always listen on the podcast, which is available on the iHeart app or wherever you listen to podcasts. And we got a show tomorrow, which we're going to do a little bit of an homage to previous shows on the EIB, where we'll talk more about Thanksgiving. And we have tomorrow... We have James Golden, Mr. Snerdly, joining us, which will be very nice to talk about Russian shows past. And we're going to talk about how you discuss with that liberal family member out there, because we've all got them. We've all got a liberal family member. So, I mean, I don't in my immediate, well, I don't want to give too much away here. We're pretty rational in the Sexton household, but once you expand beyond, there might be some libs running around.
I've never been to a Thanksgiving, I don't think, where people have voted on opposite sides, meaning people in my family, some Democrat, some Republican. Obviously, it depends on how big the family is in terms of what kind of overlap you might have there. But we're going to have some fun with you. We'll answer. We'll open up the phone lines and answer your Thanksgiving challenging questions with family and friends. Get you set for the holiday. And we know a lot of people out there are going to be on the road. We'll try to have a fun show and continue to honor the way that Rush, for many of you, handled Thanksgivings for decades as a part of the show.
Absolutely. I also want to get to a couple of your calls here. We said we would. And let's get to it. Johnny in Nashville, Tennessee. What's up, Johnny?
Hey, guys. Clay, I've been listening to you since the 3HL, midday 180. Hey, listen, man, well done. Congrats on your success. Gentlemen, I listened to the entire interview last night, the Rittenhouse on Fox, but unlike most, I went to the other station to hear their response. And it brought up some troubling observations or reactions. Other than the gag reflex, the most important thing I got from that was Cuomo, how quickly he said, well, Rittenhouse naturally should have been acquitted, and by all means, this was obviously self-defense. Now, if I've been under a rock or missed something, I'm not sure that's the narrative or been their rhetoric up to this point, and I just thought that kind of interesting how quickly they shape-shifted, if you will. Thank you.
I didn't know that. So Chris Cuomo said on his show that he thought the jury had reached the right decision. I mean, thanks for the call, by the way. I'm shocked that that would happen. But that's what the law reflected. I mean, it's not a particularly challenging case. And we talked a lot about this, Buck. I think maybe the staggering thing for so many people on the left was they had listened to all the misinformation about this case. They didn't do their own research. And so when the not guilty verdict came down, they were totally unprepared for it. Whereas, Buck, you and I had told this audience, hey, based on all the evidence that's been presented, this is a pretty open and shut self-defense case, and he's going to get off. He should, if the laws apply.
Some quotes that I remember, because I said them on the show, they never should have even brought this case against him. If this isn't self-defense, there's no such thing as self-defense. I mean, it's amazing to show you the power of the corporate Democrat leftist media here creating this perception that this was a close call. This is not a close call, folks. If someone runs up to you and you are running away from them and they swing a skateboard at your head, they try to grab the gun that's in your hand after threatening to kill you, or they wave an illegal handgun in your face, you are allowed to use force to defend yourself, or else there's no such thing as self-defense. By the way, Rittenhouse got it totally right. He's like, self-defense was on trial here. The left does, at some level, want you to have to submit to the will of the mob. And if that means they're going to burn down your store or your house or your neighborhood, they have social justice behind them. You're not allowed to stand in the way. That, fortunately, was not the outcome of this particular case. Will in Cleveland, Ohio, has got some Sandman thoughts. What's up, Will?
Afternoon. My point is with these lawsuits, the non-disclaimer. It was a disappointment by Sandman that he accepted the non-disclaimer and can't speak about it. I think it needs to be clear, the price of dishonesty. And what good is revenge if no one knows about it? You got people claiming, oh, they paid Sandman $5,000 just to go away. It was a nuisance lawsuit. I know it's not my money, but I would like for Kyle to not sign a non-disclaimer and let the whole world know. Thank you.
Thanks for the call. I mean, there are a lot of people out there who would like to see Kyle Rittenhouse take this case to court. Again, I kind of laid out the challenges that are embedded in that case, and that is the precedent right now of New York Times v. Sullivan makes it hard for a public figure to recover substantial sums of money absent actual malice, which is why he said, I think he's been coached by lawyers for purposes of filing a lawsuit, when he said to Tucker Carlson, I think it was actual malice, that to me feels like he's got lawsuits ready to file. And to the caller's point, the NDA, the non-disclosure agreement, where we don't really know what Sandman got as a result of these lawsuits. The difference there for Sandman versus Rittenhouse from a precedent perspective, Buck, is Sandman totally was innocent, just stood on the steps and became a sort of an attack dog for the left wing. They just ridiculed him, whereas Rittenhouse was in a trial, which made him a public figure to a degree that Sandman was not.
But I do think that when you're talking about someone of like Joe Biden, of his stature as a candidate for president of the United States, I mean, would it be, let's test this theory out. Could he say that, Kyle Rittenhouse was a rapist? Could he just say that because he felt like it without any basis for it? I mean, you're getting pretty close to it when you call Kyle Rittenhouse a white supremacist.
And a murderer.
He was, they charged him with homicide. So you're going to get people that will say that, to be sure. But the angle, but I also think what it shows you is that white supremacist, and this has been an intentional program of the left, has been expanded as a term beyond recognition.
Oh, white supremacy is anything they want to call white supremacy.
You're basically,
supremacy
if you're a white person, you're a white supremacist.
Or there are aspects of white supremacy that they'll identify in every system. And isn't this amazing? When you ask for proof of white supremacy in that system, that is in and of itself proof of white supremacy. I wish that they had people in schools reading more about the Soviet Union and the Gulag and disinformation and Pravda and the KGB and the FSB and all these different entities within the Soviet orbit, Clay, for how they did disinformation, how they broke people. It was never about believing the lies that the Politburo actually believed. It was about affirming the things that everyone knew was a lie. That's the society. That's when you're truly broken. And that is what the left wants for America. You cannot even agree upon the most foundational truth. Whatever we tell you is what is true.
Not only that, where if you speak out, you become a target and you're not allowed to live your normal life, which is what so many people fear right now. One bit of positivity here in the final minute, Buck. Got a great show for you tomorrow. The new Ghostbusters is fantastic.
I'm going to go see it.
If you're out with your family for the holiday season and you need to go see something that with your kids, your grandkids, and you liked the original Ghostbusters back in 1984, you will like this version in 2021. My kids loved it. Buck, you'll love it. Allie on the show will love it. Anybody who liked old school Ghostbusters, my wife loved it. They will have some fun watching it. It's a good holiday distraction if everybody's going crazy around the house.
It's amazing, folks, to see how much the Clay Travis and Buck Sexton show is catching on. Please tell more people about it across the country. We want folks to know. We want them to tune in. Hang out with us pre-Thanksgiving show tomorrow. Talk to you then.